We're so used to sparks flying, or, you know, like, or some big aha moment or something like that. And it's not necessarily, sometimes it's just a it feels like a series of coincidences.
Welcome to the Cracking Creativity Podcast. I'm your host, Kevin Chung, and I'm here to show you how creatives turn their ideas into action, create interesting projects, and build an engaged audience through shared passions. Now let's get creative. In this episode of the Cracking Creativity Podcast, I talked to Janice Dallagher, the co-host of the Middle of Nowhere show. In it, Janice shows you how to live in the present, let go of expectations, and explore creativity in everyday life. Now on to the episode. Welcome to another episode of Cracking Creativity. Today I have on my friend Janice Dallagher, the co-host of the Middle of Nowhere show and the owner of the online event hostess website. Janice, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do?
Thanks, Kevin. It's great to be here. So I am a technician turned life coach, turned full-time mom. And I recently, with Online Event Hostess, integrated my kind of love of technology or my understanding of technology with coaching. So with Online Event Hostess, my intention around it is to help coaches bring their teaching and speaking into an online format. So if they've been intimidated by, doing a webinar or doing a hangout, they already have the content, but they're just intimidated by the technology, mm-hmm. Taking that out of their hands and letting them really be present in their online, online presence, to really be present in online presence, from worrying about where's the record button? I don't know if anybody's listening, blah, blah, blah. To take that off of their shoulders for them. And interestingly, being able to speak the, sometimes a little bit woo-woo coach's language, I didn't think it would be a big deal for them, but it is a big deal. It is a big deal versus working with a straight-up kind of IT person. So kind of simplifying the technology for coaches so they can have more of a live online event presence. So that's Online Event Hostess. The Middle of Nowhere show was an experiment that started over a year ago with another coach friend of mine. And I had had a podcast many years before that when I was doing relationship coaching, which was a solo show. But we figured out a way, my coach friend Tim Noxines and I, who's actually out of South Africa. So we called it Middle of Nowhere because basically on account of the technology, we wouldn't have been able to do this as easily as we do now, to meet live in the middle of nowhere. Technology has created this place that makes it possible for us to meet in the middle of nowhere. And the basic premise around the show is to just show up and expect good things. And what do we create when we give ourselves space to do that? So it's a weekly live practice of showing up and expecting good things. And you've been on our show, which I really appreciate. That's episode 52. If you're looking for it, it's an awesome show. And we talked about art marketing. It was a very interesting, very cool conversation. And I'm literally on the outside, I'm a full-time mom with a 4-year-old husband and a 4-year-old. So trying to figure out family, figure out how to do family like we do everything else.
Gotcha. You use the phrase technician turned life coach. What did you do previous to these two ventures that you're on now?
So I have my degree out of college is material science and engineering. So I'm an engineer by profession. I have never actually been, have I been paid? I've been paid like meagerly for engineering work. So if anybody who's not familiar, not that it makes a difference necessarily in people's lives. Well, it does. Some people's lives. Material science and engineering is like chemical engineering, but it works in the solid state. So my specialty in particular was ceramics, ceramics and glass. So I find that science extremely interesting. However, I am not a good engineer. I'm just not a very good engineer. I'm very appreciative of science, but as far as engineering is concerned, I suck. I suck as an engineer. So obviously can't get paid as an engineer when you're not very good at it. I actually interviewed first coming out of college for a couple engineering jobs and they said no. And I didn't really understand why they wouldn't take me. but it ended up being a really good thing. I ended up self-teaching myself, teaching myself different computer apps and software. So at the time I didn't realize that my being able to learn, the Microsoft Office suite, and granted, this was like mid to late 90s. So we didn't have a lot of the technology that we have now. But it's kind of translated today into picking up on online technologies. Some of the stuff, especially the stuff that's used for webinar, is so accessible now. And but for people who are not technical, and a lot of coaches are not, people who work in a lot of soft skills are not technical people, those online technologies, even though they're easy and simple, and very accessible, are not accessible to them because of this intimidation factor. And I realize that that's part of my gift, being able to bring people down from an overwhelmed state simply because they don't know how something works and how it could benefit them, and talking them down from that overwhelmed state to being able to use and even embrace technology. So I had actually done computer app training a couple years out of college. So trained on a corporate level. So trained, you know, people from American Express, people from Chrysler Corporation at the time. And teaching is really one of my first loves. I didn't even realize that, because being in that kind of engineer state, I wasn't necessarily expected to talk to people. I assumed that I was too shy. Like, that was kind of the thing that was driven into me, that I was too shy to be a presenter, too shy to speak to people. So teaching had been kind of scripted out of my future at first, until I had to find a job after college. Obviously, I was not working as an engineer. I was just working at a computer reseller, doing RFP writing for them. So for requests for proposals, which is basically, I mean, you take canned templated, in a lot of cases, canned templated words and paragraphs and put them into proposal responses. And found myself teaching classes on Microsoft Excel and Excel and Word and Access, you know, all those Microsoft products. And this isn't a promotion for Microsoft, but it was one of my first, like, actually fulfilling jobs. So that's the side that I come from. and then worked in the corporate world for a good 15 years in and out of software stuff. My last gig before becoming a life coach and leaving corporate America was in a health insurance company in operations. So it's always around systems and operations and actually understanding, like there's got to be a software application for that. Like knowing that there's a technology, solution or to automate, a human system. That always ended up being my, my forte, I should say. Even in the health insurance company. So that's how we ended up here. Got my life coaching certificate, left corporate America. Gosh, when was that? 2007. Gosh, so it's like 7 or 8 years ago. And then I, started my life coaching practice, relationship coaching for singles and divorced women, and did that until my daughter was born about 4 years ago. Right. That's my roundabout journey to today.
Why did you choose engineering as the thing that you wanted to study?
I don't know if I actually chose it. Or if I was just convinced that, that would be good work for me and that would be, and that I'd be good at it. So when I was in high school, they had these programs, they were really pushing to get, more minorities and women into the engineering program, and to graduate more minorities and women out of the engineering program. So they started in high school. So I went a couple summers, I think my junior year and my senior year maybe, of high school. During the summer, they'd have these programs and they'd, you know, stay at the university. And so I did a program at Arizona State University. And I did another program at the University of Arizona in Tucson, Arizona. So to the two state universities, did engineering programs there. And I'm like, well, okay. And I just sort of just continued on with it because I certainly didn't want to be an English major, like in my mind, in my mind and in my training, like that would be highly looked down upon. So no, and I don't even know if I was interested in being an English major, but so it never, the possibility of being something other than a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer never entered my mind. And to become a doctor and to become a lawyer, I didn't want to be in school that long. So I was left with becoming an engineer. Yeah. The opening of expanding beyond engineering, though, happened in college. And I think more as an escape from doing engineering work, I ended up doing a lot of leadership work, like opened me to doing stuff that I would have never guessed myself to do in the mindset that I had entered college with. Speaking in front of people, actually being like the president of a club on campus, like that shouldn't have been me. Like it shouldn't have been me. But yet it ended up being a very good fit, and it's something that I really wanted and craved. So leadership is a big thing for me. And I was very surprised. I was like very surprised how much enjoyment I got out of it. And I think people knew, like, that girl's never going to be an engineer. people might have known, but they were just very gracious about it. Well, and I don't know. I think when, and I'm just going to go there. Like, being Asian, and so my parents are Filipino, and they immigrated from the Philippines back in the 70s. And that was part of their creating safety for me. And I was a very shy, I mean, I'm still a shy kind of introverted person. I do a lot more reflective work. Like I need that balance of time alone from time with people so that I have the energy to really be present when I go out to be with people. But it was just kind of assumed, because I was a very quiet child, it was just kind of assumed that she doesn't like talking to people. She doesn't like talking to people. She doesn't like to be in front of crowds, or, you know, just really. And so it just was sort of drilled into me from a very young age that Janice, that's not your thing. Like, leadership or something like that, they, like, so far removed from where people, it seemed, from where people saw me as a child. So I don't know if that answered your question. I kind of ran ahead with that, but
yeah, it's interesting, because I went through the same thing as far as not seeing myself as someone who could teach other people and lead. So mm-hmm. It's very interesting to see it from other people.
Yeah. It's a really, well, especially at the time in college. And I think a lot of Asian American kids, college age, and I think it happens earlier now because people my age are having kids. Like, so Asian Americans who went through this strict idea of themselves get to college and like, wow, I am so much more than I thought that I was. People like me start having kids, and we don't train our kids. And I'm not doing it with my child, train our kids to be a certain way necessarily, and let it be open to them as far as what their gifts are and things like that. So at least that's what I see kind of happening with some of us. So I think to break out of that happens earlier. Not to say that there wasn't certain gifts of that journey of breaking out from who they thought I was, so to speak. So interesting. Yeah, I love leadership. I didn't realize the whole leader thing that we had that in common. And teaching really opened myself up to, college really opened myself up to the possibilities around that. But I really, even then, I didn't really think that I could do it as a living, like to teach as a living. But at the time, I thought that the only way that you could teach in a professional sense was to be a professor or to be a high school or elementary teacher, which is neither of those I wanted to do. So even in the way of education and self-education, and then and technology just sort of changed all that up. And having different subjects now to teach about too. I thought I was going to be a teacher at a community college. I'm like, oh, I need a master's degree. And I wasn't willing to do that. Wasn't willing to do that at the time, because I had just gotten out of college and I didn't want to go back. So, finding a way to be a professional trainer, professional teacher, so as a corporate trainer, that worked out really well. And that was an important stage of learning.
How does someone figure out that what they're doing, or they've been doing for many years, isn't what they're either supposed to do or they feel like they can do?
It's very interesting because human beings, like mentally, we're just so capable. We're so capable and then so adaptable too. So So, for instance, I have a degree in engineering. I probably shouldn't, right? But that's what the paper says. So mentally capable of doing the work that it takes to get a degree in material science. That doesn't make me actually hireable, right? Because from a practical sense, I don't have enough experience, enough good experience. And to be honest, the reason why is that my heart wasn't really in it. So to pursue internships and stuff, if that had actually sounded interesting to me, I probably would have found them. But it was more interesting to me, like in retrospect, it's easy to say, it was more interesting to me to do, to conduct leadership retreats during the summers, to do planning for, oh, what are we going to do in the club this fall? You know, how are we going to motivate people? And, you know, what kind of projects are we going to take on in the school year this year? Like, that was more important to me at the time during the summer. So it's not like I just sat around all summer. But, like, for one, like, in retrospect, it's easy to see. Like, obviously, the interest is in a different place. But, like, I know plenty of people, I mean, especially going to school with a lot of Asians and Asian Americans, a lot of us became engineers who didn't end up, who still work, I should say, who still work in industry and still do that well, when I know that I've worked with them from a leadership perspective, and that they have amazing capability and they get amazing fulfillment from it. So whenever your time comes, I mean, I think it just depends on the circumstances too. So you can certainly work 20 years in an industry that does, that isn't really feeding your soul, and your life and your mind will adapt to that. But there are a number of scripts playing, a number of scripts at play. And if you're in your professional life now, like well into your professional career, I think it gets harder. It gets a little more challenging to figure out what do I really want to do, because 10, 15 years into it, you figure you should already know. But for instance, back in 2008, when we had the whole economy thing, little economic bubble pop on us, there were a lot of people, I was a life coach at the time, and a lot of people, 15, 20 year industry people. So people my age, people in their mid-30s, having been in industry for, in a technical industry, for 10 or 15 years, approaching me because even though they had a job and they probably weren't going to lose that job, but because of the economic instability, you know, you're seeing pink slips getting thrown around all around you. And it's hard to know if your job is going to be there tomorrow or if you're going to be served a pink slip the next day. So it caused a lot of people to ask themselves what they were doing. What have I been doing and what do I have to show for it? And those feelings of, I've been doing this for years and I'm not really satisfied. I've been collecting a good paycheck for it, but I'm not really satisfied. Those are like the first, that's an opening up to maybe I could be doing something different. So that's when I saw a lot of people would come to me asking, like, where am I going to go if I lose this job? Because I haven't done anything else. So really investigating at that point, what else are they good at? And what ends up being part of that conversation is, the things that bring them a spark, that bring a spark into their life. So that's always an interesting conversation. And having been a life coach during that time and be able to have conversations like that with people was really fun and interesting. Now people are stable again, so they don't think about it. I hope it doesn't take another like economic downturn for people to start questioning themselves again. But there are a lot of ways that you can, you don't have to lose your day job to start sort of a creative practice, to do things on the side. But I understand, like, at the time that I worked in corporate, it was always more than a 40-hour week for me. When I became a manager, it was like, and I didn't have children at the time. If I had free time, I was probably working, which is nuts. So don't do that. First of all, you have to create space. Like, you have to create space and time to not be doing work, to not be obligated into something. And I think that's one of the hardest parts, I think, especially for women to do. Women who don't have other obligations outside of the workplace. And actually, even if you do have, like, family obligations and stuff, to find time, regular time in your week that doesn't hold any obligation, doesn't have, I don't want to say any purpose, but just is an empty space that you don't have to do anything with, and just have to be a long period of time, even if it's 5 minutes a day. But even if it's a half an hour on the weekend, like, be sure to pad your day with free time. And when I say free, like, really free, like, don't be cleaning up the house or like, I should be making something out of this time. Like, you need a couple of sessions to kind of let that go and let it be open so that other creative ideas can pop up for you.
Whoa. I have a lot of different questions based upon that answer. What types of questions can people ask themselves to figure out what they want to do creatively?
Types of questions you can ask yourself. There's always the, if you can reflect far back enough, think of a time where you actually felt fulfilled with something, or you were enjoying a process so much that you lost track of time, that you didn't care what the outcome was. Like, you might have been working toward creating this big mural and maybe even didn't finish. So I know with a lot of people that's the case. Like, there was a time where they were engaged in some sort of creative project, and, you know, they were in it, they lost track of time, but they never finished, so it's considered a failure. So try to let go of the outcome part of it. Think of times where you've lost track of time are good ones. Times perhaps in early childhood, think of games or crafts that you had to do, or that you just were really gravitated toward. And if it means, like, asking parents, people who actually knew you and observed you when you were small, what did I like to do? Like, when I was, like, in first and second grade, you know, what did I like to do when I wasn't at school, what did I enjoy? So sometimes it's reflecting back, way, way back. Other times it's, what is, if you've ever watched, like, a documentary or something, and you're like, that is really interesting, before your mind turned into questioning, but I'd never make money at it, or I'd never be good enough at it. Before that conversation started, what were you watching that looked really fascinating to you? So you have to follow fascination, follow amazement, find moments in your life where those things occurred. As we get older and farther away from a creative practice, it's harder to remember, I think. But if you've ever observed someone, that's another one too. Like if you ever observe someone, or if, for instance, you're going to a street fair or something like that, and there's a craft or, you know, and you see artisans, and you see their craft, what are things that really are really interesting to you? Or you want to know how they made that thing. And creative doesn't necessarily have to be in art either. It can be, I think there is creativity in math and the sciences too. And it's just the way we pursue a thing. Pursuing something without necessarily an objective at the end or an expected outcome, that's I think where that creative spark is. That's where you know your creative spark is.
Yeah. You, to find out what you want to do, it's always good to take on this childlike wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So when you were a kid, or if you have a kid or you know of any kids, you'll know that they ask questions almost all the time. That they have such a curiosity about the world.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in life, we lose that.
Yeah.
And we no longer question things and try to figure out what we're trying to do in life, because working for the weekend is not the way to go. It's figuring out what makes you tick and relating that with other people, I think, is the ultimate goal.
Yeah, it's a life changer. It's a life changer, and it's and it will change the way you look at your regular work week life. It changes the way you look at problems, because creativity is all about process, understanding, not even understanding process, just being present in the process without necessarily knowing how it's going to turn out, but trusting that it's going to be okay. How do you practice doing that though? It really is. It's a practice. It's something that, especially if it's been trained out of you, this is not the way most corporations work. You work toward an outcome that is, it's been reverse engineered, right? So we want this to happen. What are the steps that we need to take to have this occur? It's always measured. It's always engineered. There's always an expected outcome. Questioning again, also, like you're talking about the childlike, wonder, the questioning, like when you spend 40, 50 hours a week in an environment where that's not part of the environment, you need something to sort of offset that. So that's why our podcast, Middle of Nowhere too, is like kind of that space where there's no shame in questioning. There's no shame in, I have a side gig, or I have an interest in photography, but I'm not that good. Like, we don't care. We don't have a lot of spaces, I think, in society, cultural wise, where, unless you go out and create that space for yourself and find those people who support you in that, we don't have any other spaces otherwise to be able to do that and pursue things that we weren't traditionally trained for, strictly out of interest, strictly because we want to see what we can do in it, or just see how it feels to be in that process. We don't usually create time to be able to do that, to indulge, but it's kind of indulgent, so to speak. So spa days, for instance, I hate spa days. I don't want to say I hate spa days. I'm not a real girly girl in that sense. And I can understand, yeah, getting the pedicure, manicure can be like really relaxing, and getting a massage and all that stuff. But I would rather be creating something on my own, like rather have that alone time. If I'm going to end up, you know, having a 6 or 8 hour day available to me, I would rather just have it open to be able to pick up whatever. Or you know, go off somewhere, bring a drawing book and give myself a couple options. So definitely a notebook and pen in case there's journaling and writing, something spurs some journaling and writing, blank book, maybe some colored pencils and some crayons. That would be the alternate spa day would be a creativity spa day for me. Some books, probably take some books with me, to read, or magazines with good visuals. That would be my creativity spa day. Out in nature, and it probably have to be out in nature too. So maybe there's a hike involved, something like that. I know you didn't ask about the creativity spa day, but...
Now that's good. How does someone find one of their own creativity spa days for themselves?
So if you have been telling yourself that you're not creative, to tell you right now is like you just create it, would be like ridiculous, right? But you can literally just create it, and with the knowledge that it doesn't have to be perfect and you're the only one who's doing it anyway. So if you screw up, there's no real screwing up. It's on you, but you kind of make it whatever you want to make it. I do have a couple of friends who, here in Arizona, in Mesa in particular, they do retreats. So it's like during the day, and it's a couple hours, during the day, they go for a hike. And this is in like the fall and winter, so they never do it in the summer. They go for a hike in the fall, it's kind of scheduled out. So there's like 20 minutes of a hike, and then, she brings, it's a husband and wife team. She brings like all the art supplies. So some clay, I think clay, one of the times like clay was at the end of the day. So like to sum up your day, we all made a little sculpture type of thing. So there are people who will organize that for you if you're not sure where to start with that. Like, oh, I've got 4 hours on a Saturday. What can I do? I think blocking out the time is the most important part. And when we set an appointment, like we're going to do this retreat or whatever, that's always a good start. Like if we don't know where to begin, because at least we're going somewhere, we're making the appointment, we're going to be there. So the time is blocked out. If you're doing it on your own, definitely block a chunk of time out. And don't let anything get in the way of that. So have it blocked out like you would for a regular spa day. I would say start with photography is always like a really easy one, for especially now since you have cameras in your phone and whatever, and almost everybody has it, like at least like a little Canon digital camera. I think photography is like an easy one to just get into, because now that everything is digital, there are no bad photos. Like there are no bad photos, and the ones that you don't like, you just delete them. It's not like before when we had film and like, I had these 24 frames, that's it. And, so don't like just take pictures of anything. Well, now you can, like so literally walking around your neighborhood, depending on how interesting your neighborhood, or pick another neighborhood to go to, or a park or whatever, bring your camera or take your camera phone with you, and just start snapping pictures, and like kind of promise yourself not to look at them, until the latter half, and until like, you know, the last 20 minutes of your creative spa day, because then you can start judging yourself on the shots that you took and be like, oh, forget it, I'll never be a photographer. Well, you know, it's your first time out, so take it easy. kind of take it easy on yourself. If film is your thing, like independent films and foreign films, like find an indie film festival that's going on and just absorb it all in and talk to other people. I think there's a huge benefit in talking to other people who do it or have that same interest as you. Don't ask what their day jobs are, because that's not what you guys are there for. So being able to forget what your what you'd normally say, like a networking mixer type of thing. So what do you do? Like, try to avoid that question as much as possible.
You talk a lot about the process and the importance of the process. Mm-hmm. What can people do to prevent themselves from jumping out of what normally works and figure out how to get into a process that does work?
The first thing I'm going to say around that is when you start, like, know that you are, you're going to slip back and like, want to know, how's this going to turn out? How's this, like, as soon as you feel yourself, getting kind of judgy about it or judgmental about the work, then you know you're moving into a space that is not appreciative of process. And if you haven't done things that are appreciative of process for a while, it can really be hard to have a long-standing appreciation for it. So if you're too scared to jump in yourself, which I think a lot of us do, I think observation is a great way to start. First of all, it feels kind of passive, and nobody's judging you for observing. So for instance, observing someone cooking, observing someone making art, and just observing and being aware of what they're doing at the time, just noticing them. So this is awesome because it takes the focus off of yourself, right? And it doesn't have to be like a professional or something like that. If you know someone who is a really good cook, I have some friends who are like amazing cooks, I will say, hey, when is your cooking day going to be? Or, when are you going to be making that favorite dish of mine? When are you going to be making it? Can I come and watch you? Right? Can I come and watch you cook? So just taking that as sort of an example. So observation, I think, is a great opener, but watch how you observe. Watch how you observe. And just really watching what they do. Mommy. And, oh, hey, babe, I see. I'll be out in just a second. Thanks, hon. Okay, babe. 10 more minutes. She doesn't tell time, by the way. I don't think she knows really what 10 minutes are. There you go. You got a special guest appearance on your show.
Nice.
Observing children. That's a good reminder. Yeah. Observing children is another way to do it. Playing with children, observing with children. Just find ways to get present where you are not checking time, where you're not checking time, where you're not expecting outcome. And sometimes you won't see that you didn't do that until afterwards, until, you know, somebody has called the kids to come home already, right? So those are things to notice. If you're doing crafts with kids, even like volunteering, although, you know, sometimes depending on what the kind of volunteering opportunity it is, can be very, sometimes it's not fun. It's not fun and it's loose. So it depends on what kind of volunteering opportunity. Those are some ways. I think those are some ways to start appreciating process. Appreciating process has everything to do with being present in the moment. Some people think that being in the moment is all about like passion and throwing it into the wind and all that stuff. Not necessarily. Like, I think there is a huge ability to be present in as an observer. Like, so if judgment is a tough thing for you, find yourself judging yourself a lot when you are trying to appreciate a process, or you're asking yourself in the middle of observing, like, am I appreciating? Like, if you have to ask if you're appreciating the process well enough, you probably have to back off. Like, you, you shouldn't be noticing yourself. That's the whole thing, is that you don't notice yourself in it. Kids have an amazing, an amazing way of doing that naturally, because they don't have those kind of judgments. They haven't developed them yet the way we have as adults. So, or hanging around that free spirited friend who just seems to just kind of flit and float everywhere, and observe them, observe how they do it, and ask them questions. Feel free to ask them questions, because I don't think most of the time they don't mind, as long as it's not a judging type of question. Or apologize ahead of time. Like, I don't want to be judgmental, but how are you able to do that? Like, what are you thinking at the time that you said, let's just create a holiday? And that's like a story. That's an old story that I have, which is probably one of the experiences that kind of indicated to me that, yeah, Janice, you are a creative in kind of a weird sense. A bunch of friends of ours, they're mostly engineers, and I love them, but they're mostly engineers. And we would just never get together unless it was like an actual holiday, like an actual bank holiday. Like, something always had to be planned. And then we would always get together, and it would be like, oh, we should really get together more often. Oh, when's the next holiday? Oh, it's not until like Memorial Day or something like that. Right. So, I'm like, well, that doesn't have to be the case. You guys need a holiday. You don't need a bank to tell you, or the government to tell you, that it's a holiday to get together. Like, you just make it up. And they're looking at me like, what the hell are you talking about? I'm like, you just make up a holiday. So it's just like, create a holiday. So every month, let's just create a holiday. And, you know, like, I didn't know that I was that person. I didn't know that I was the flitty floater person that all the engineers came and hung out with, because it released them. And I didn't know that that was me in my group, in my little group. I didn't know that that person was me for a lot of people. But just observing that person, I think everybody has that friend who thinks a little differently and doesn't judge, and it's watching what they do and watching how they think of things and how you would do things differently, and just sort of appreciating the difference. I think those are really gentle ways of breaking yourself into appreciating process more, appreciating process better. Lose the watch. I would say lose the watch, lose your timekeeper. Have certain times of the day where you're not watching the clock. Hanging out with kids too is always, doing activities with kids is always something that brings anything that brings you kind of into the moment. For some people, it has to be more physical, like not observing, but more physical. So if it's a sport, or if it's a certain, if it's exercise, if it's dance, yeah, do it. If it's like blasting music really loud, in your headphones or in your home, those are all, ways to sort of experiment in, where moments where you lose it, where you just like, I say lose it, like where you don't care what time it is. You don't care what else is going on. You're like totally, totally involved, and like observe afterwards. Like, if that, how enjoyable, like on a scale of, you know, 1 to 5, how enjoyable was that? Would I do that again? Yeah, for a long time for me, it was like dance. And I say clubbing, I'm like 40 plus now. I don't go to clubs anymore, but I always wonder, people would, some friends or coworkers would ask me, like, when you go to a club, what are you going there for? Because most people are going there with the intention of like meeting people or drinks. Sometimes it's the dance, but to hear somebody say like, oh, I just like the dance. I like the music. Like, and I just go out there and freestyle. Right. So I was working at a software company when one of my coworkers, mostly male dominated, workplace. And one of my coworkers asked me, like, I think he thought that I was like, I mean, it was like, I was in my mid 30s. And, I think he thought that I was like a weird old lady trying to be young again or something, but like that I was a clubber or something, but like just the access to the music and, dancing and like, you know, you can't have like a light show like that at home and being around a bunch of people who are just kind of letting it loose. Yeah. Like those are the kinds of, things that I sort of gravitated toward. So, and I think it's different for everybody. Some people like lose track of time, doing math problems, doing crosswords. I mean, you probably can't, I don't know. There's probably a way to, if crosswords like were your creative outlet, to optimize that into something or, you know, turn that into something. I'm not sure. There's probably a way to do it. I'm certainly not saying that that's not a kind of creativity either, but it is a way of a person putting themselves in kind of a moment. Yeah, for some people it's Sudoku. So, yeah, I don't judge whatever it is for anybody, but I think the Sudoku person to try out, open sketching, and if like, I think for some people, like the blank page is really daunting for them. So I will even suggest something like get a coloring book, you know, get a coloring book and, the free crayons that you get with a kid's meal and start with color by numbers, start with coloring books. And for some people, that is really already a big step. That's a big step to move into.
Wow. there's a few things I pulled out of that. One was the being able to observe what you're doing and finding those moments of fascination.
Yeah.
And intuition.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to be present in the moment while you're in those things. So recognizing, oh, this is when I feel like I am my best self, right?
Yeah. It feels weird. I think it feels weird at first because it doesn't, nothing, necessarily has to be happening. Like, we're so used to sparks flying, or, you know, like, or some big aha moment or something like that. And it's not necessarily, sometimes it's just a series of, it feels like a series of coincidences. But really, when you're in a moment and it doesn't look from the outside that anything is happening, and even on the inside, it may not look or feel like anything is happening, but you can look at it in retrospect and be like, I can't believe we spent an hour there, you know, or I can't believe I did color by numbers for the last 15 minutes, like whatever your threshold is. I always tell people to set a timer, put it to the side to whatever they think their threshold is. And I always say underestimate it versus over. Like, don't try to push yourself too hard. So if you're like, I think I could go like a whole 30 minutes, right? And so it's your first time out, then set it for 15 and do it and see how fast the time goes. See how fast the time goes. And then you can always add another 15. So, but sometimes if we set the bar too high, then we have an expectation. We've already set an expectation for ourselves. The 15-minute timer, 5-minute, 10-minute, 15-minute, whatever, small amounts. Start with a small amount of time. And just observe and turn the timer around so you're not watching it. But see, basically, it's an exercise in seeing how easily you can release time. You can just like let go of how long it's been. And it's always a surprise when the timer goes off. It's always a surprise. And that's how it should be. Like, wow, I made it a whole 15 minutes. I used to do that with meditation all the time. Right now, the practice for me is to meditate 5 minutes a day, every day, which since my daughter was born was very hard to find. So for me, meditation is a process, is also a way of being present. I think it is, if you've never had a meditation practice, it can be hard to get into at first. And after, when my daughter turned, I don't know, around the time that she was 3 years old, I was like, okay, fine. I just got to do something. Like, it had felt like 3 years without any sort of presence practice, without any sort of meditation or anything like that. I felt like 3 years had gone by that I hadn't even spent time alone. Like, I'd been with a baby this whole time. So I started with a 2-minute practice. But the only thing was to do it every day. So I set the timer for 2 minutes. I actually got an app online, a meditation app, and I would set it for 3 minutes every morning. So roll out of bed and literally hit the meditation timer for 2 minutes, and then it slowly increased. I'm at 5 minutes a day now, but I'm at 5 minutes a day, but I do it every day. And we're coming up on my year anniversary of daily meditation now. But it doesn't matter what amount of time, as long as you spend like a little bit of amount of time in it.
Gotcha. That's definitely something that people can take into consideration for their everyday life, just taking a moment away from the technology or trying to learn or do anything and reflecting upon your situation in life.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because it feels quiet, but it doesn't have to be, if you're new to it, it doesn't have to be super reflective. It doesn't have to be super serious. There's a saying that angels have wings because they take themselves lightly. Or angels fly because they take themselves lightly. So, whatever you decide to do, I say commit to it for a week if you can handle it. Like, if it's meditation or whatever, use the timer method. Just long enough so that you can get used to not tracking the time. I think we just have a thing about tracking the time and how long it's been and how close are we are to the bell. So things like that, they seem like really small things that don't make a big difference. Over practice, they do. When as they become habitual, they do make a difference. Just in the way you observe everything, it makes it possible to observe everything else instead of do, and have to have your hands in everything. That's a huge thing, to keep your hands off of a thing is a practice in itself. And that's all kind of related. That's all practice is kind of related. But yeah, there are really practical ways of just starting to introduce. I always look at it as sort of an experiment. Like, oh, she talked about this creativity thing. Like, give it a try for a week. And if you're just like, this is ridiculous, then don't do it anymore. That's fine. But try it out after a week. Don't judge it until you've tried it for a week, and just see if things are different. If a shift has sort of occurred. I think working with a coach also is a great way to find, presence, to be in a practice of presence. Like if you need somebody to be with you to sort of hold your hand and just hold space for you in a present moment, to help get you into a present moment, a coach is really good for that.
Cool. Well, we've been on here for about an hour. We didn't even get to your two deals, Middle Nowhere Show and Online Event Hostess. Is there anything about either of these that you want to talk about?
I don't know. Just they were kind of created out of creativity and observation. Middle of Nowhere Show, for sure. Just having conversations with a coach friend all the time. And we were like, you know, some really good wisdom drops out of these, you know, weekly calls with each other. We should record these. We should probably share them. And that's literally what it came out of. Oh. And now it's been going on for over a year. So very excited about that. But yeah, some amazing ideas come out of creativity, creative practice, and just being present for being present for your life. You have to have a practice of observing it so you can notice it. And they're not misses along the way. I think we think of things of hits and misses sort of. But with creativity, it's just an evolution. So where I am, as far as my creative evolution is concerned, besides my daughter, I like your idea, that practice of creating of 10 ideas a day, which is Altucher, what's his name? that's his idea of stoking the creativity machine, the idea machine. We all have it. So that's another idea also. But those were projects that Online Event Hostess, that really came out of people always asking me about, oh, really? You just do a hangout and, oh, that's free, or, oh, that tool is free, or it's like really low cost, or consulting basically with coaches thinking that they have to have all this complicated equipment to start putting video or audio information online, or do classes, or recording workshops. And they don't. Usually you can just start where you are, which is another important point about creativity. If you go to middleofnowhereshow.com, the Creativity Kickstarter on there has a lot of these ideas that I've been talking about and some principles like starting where you are, setting a timer until it becomes a practice, and making the time sacred, so not letting other things get into that appointed time. You can download that for free over at middleofnowhereshow.com, and I talk about a lot of those things that we've been talking about today. So, yeah, and then you end up with crazy ideas. Online Event Hostess was just, yeah, like I said, reflecting on gifts, which I think is hard for ourselves to think about what we're good at. And then talking with other people that you trust who will be like, yeah, but you're really good at technology. I don't think you should abandon it, kind of thing. I spent like the last couple of years kind of abandoning my geek side. So much so that people didn't know that I knew this stuff. And I would say, oh, well, why don't you use this tool or that tool for that? And they wouldn't believe me because they didn't know that I came from technology. So, yeah. So it's a reinvention. It's a reinvention, so to speak.
Yeah. So it goes just back to the point of being aware, which is the idea of present, and recognizing the moments of that awareness so that you can create from that place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And every experience up to this point is leading you to the next thing. So there are like when I think about like judging past experiences, you can't really, because you had to have them to get to here. So if it was, that art project that I did back in eighth grade, I'm like, it doesn't really matter, how it turned out. But if you know, like, oh, there's something about paint, that sounds something like my daughter would say, there's something about paint, cause she loves to paint. Like it sounds kind of weird to say, and I think if it sounds kind of weird to say, like you're almost like, oh, I probably shouldn't say that. If somebody heard me, like it would sound like kind of weird. That's kind of a path to follow. That's like, well, just kind of delve in it a little bit. I would say all the different projects that I have done, kind of side projects, have all been born out of going down those rabbit holes, so to speak.
Awesome. I have a couple more questions left.
Okay. I'll try to keep my answers succinct.
Who is somebody that you find to be very creative, and what do you think they do to get to that place of creativity?
Oh my goodness. Someone that I find very creative. I'm really fascinated with, and of course I can't think of any names now, but anybody who is like a modern day sort of Renaissance man or woman, people with quote hidden talents, and I tend to gravitate toward the ordinary people, like even friends or whatever, that, or new friends, for instance, upon further asking and learning about them, you realize, you know, they've played piano for 18 years or whatever. I always find that interesting, like getting past what they do on their daily, their 9-to-5 during the week, Monday, Friday thing, and finding out what they do in their off hours. That's always fascinating to me. So of course, I mean, classic people like Leonardo da Vinci, people who write about varied things. So Daniel Pink is really interesting to me. I'm trying to think of some women that I can throw in there too, because I don't like just throwing all men's names in there. Queen Latifah was someone who was really interesting to me for a little while. People with like really varied careers. So those are to name a few. I'm sure as soon as we get off of this call, I'll think of like five or 10 others. But I think everybody, and what I love about those people is that just everybody has that. Like, it's not just them. Like, everybody has their something or some things that, they're not what you think. Yeah, usually people with like varied careers are really attractive to me. And if you, I don't know if you can tell, like I'm looking around my room now. I'm like, whose books do I have? Like whose kind of stuff do I have? And I'm not finding much. I'm not finding much around here. But yeah, I mean, those are some examples, but I think, everybody has it, and I love to have that conversation with people where they know, like, I'm not interested in what you do for your regular life. Like, I sort of am, but I'm just asking so that we can get that out of the way, so I can find out who you really are. And not in like a gossipy kind of way, more in like kind of getting to the heart of you. People will have, well, kind of like we're having today, will have conversations with me, and I think that's what they find out happens is, we have talked, we had an intention to talk about whatever, or we've talked about nothing that we intended to talk about, but we talked about a lot, and those are conversations that I have with other people, drawing that out of other people too is always really fun. So they end up being like one of the people on my bookshelf. Like, I'm like, I'm like thinking of just ordinary people who do amazing stuff.
Yeah. It's all about digging underneath the like surface that everyone puts on.
Yeah.
Towards everybody else and figuring out a little bit what makes people tick.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Yeah. That's where it really gets interesting. Like, yeah, what you do during your 9-to-5, that's important. But, I want to know what happens who you are when you clock out. Yeah. So everybody has that. Everybody has that. I think that I have a tendency to watch, lately I've been watching, I don't usually watch a lot of talk shows, but the Graham Norton show, which is on the BBC, right? I don't know why his show right now is so fascinating to me, because he engages with, I mean, it's still celebrities and people in entertainment who are the guests on his show, but the way he engages them is just so different. It's not about the movie that they're promoting. It's not about, and it's like them, they're not talking about anything specifically, but really, they'll talk a little bit about the movie, but he really gets to engage them as people, which I think is, like has a great knack for that. And he's ridiculously funny, just so funny. And the people on the show always laugh and they're lighthearted and they drink alcohol on the show. So, it's lately, that's what I've been into.
Awesome. I have one more question, and that is, I know we touched upon this a little bit throughout the entire conversation, but what is your definition of creativity, and what can people do to be more creative?
My definition of creativity is, it is, everybody has it, first of all, and I think we're born sort of leading with it. And it's something that we get trained out of, trained into tempering in some way, if not ignoring altogether for a time, especially when we go into schools and stuff like that. So creativity is just a, I mean, kind of what we've been talking about already. It's the way of thinking that is in free flow. And everybody has sort of a subject where they lose track of time. And just brilliance comes out of that. It like doesn't seem very brilliant at the time, but when that creativity comes in contact, that free flow comes in contact with somebody else's free flow, and then you get that in a room, it just kind of amplifies on each other. So, everybody has that, has access to that. Some people call it, you know, it's like a mix of intuition, a mix of art. But I think creativity is the expression of your true self in the world. So however that shows up for you, and it's different, I think it's a little different for everybody, that's creativity. As far as where people can start, we've talked about a lot of places where people can start. And it really depends on how far removed you are from, like, how strange of an idea that sounds like to you. Like I don't have any creativity. You probably have to start pretty small, with like a 5-minute timer and, some semi-structured activity to do for 5 minutes. But I always like using a timer to underestimate the time that you can actually do your creative thing. Try it out for, I say on a daily basis, it's always, then you're not like, if you're like doing it every other day, you're not guessing which day it is. So my quick suggestion is for 1 week, set the timer, have 5 minutes set aside during the day. And it could be in a lunch hour. It could be, you know, before you leave your office at work or before you leave to go to the office, whatever fits. But for 5 minutes a day, set the timer, have a coloring book and crayons, and just go at it for 5 minutes. Just wait and turn the timer around. Keep going until it dings. And then drop it and then go on your way. So try that out for a week, and you don't have to keep the coloring papers if you don't want to. I think it's always cool to observe where I started on day one and where I ended on day seven. And just that idea of releasing yourself for 5 minutes, releasing yourself from rules around those 5 minutes. So if the first day you're coloring really neatly within the lines, by the third day, you kind of question, well, do I have to be in the lines, right? What happens when I just, I put the, rip the paper off the crayons and go sideways and just go crazy for the next 5 minutes? Maybe you're having a rough morning and, that's what you need to do before you leave, you get out the door. Experiment with it, and you don't have to share that with anybody if you don't want to. I always think the results are interesting to share. So if you want to share them with me, I would love to hear it. I don't judge. I think it's awesome. Anybody who, it's really an indulgence. We see it as an indulgence. Really, it's 5 minutes a day to indulge in something like that. Like, as far as the losing side of that, there's not much. So that, I think, is a great way to experiment with it. Or, you know, for 5 minutes a day, if you don't like the whole crayon, sometimes can be a traumatic thing for adults that don't want to deal with crayons. then go out and take pictures on your phone, on your camera, for 5 minutes. Just observational pictures for 5 minutes a day. Take a walk, take 5 minutes worth of pictures and call it good. Do that for a week and see what you come up with. So those are two really easy ways of getting started.
Yeah, and you also have on the Middle of Nowhere Show website a free creativity Kickstarter that people can sign up for.
Yes, with lots of ideas around how to use those 5 minutes a day, as well as like some five tips to make it not be overwhelming for you. So, yeah, that's a great place to start.
Yeah. Well, this has been an awesome talk, Janet. We got to a lot of stuff, and we didn't actually get to some of the things that we had intentionally came on here for, but that's always a good thing find the fascination in life and see where it takes you.
Absolutely.
Where can people find you online, and how can people get in touch with you?
You can find me at our podcast at middleofnowhereshow.com. That's me and my co-host. But if you find us on there, you'll find me for sure. Or at onlineeventhostess.com. If you want to email me, especially if you've done like the 7-day exercise and you just want to chit chat about it, just email me at onlineeventhostess@gmail.com. And I would love to hear about that. I'd love to hear about anybody trying it out. So
awesome.
Thanks for having me on the show, Kevin.
Of course. It's been a great talk, and I hope to chat again soon.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
And that's it for the 15th episode of Cracking Creativity. For show notes, go to crackingcreativity.org/15. If you like this episode, subscribe to the show on iTunes at crackingcreativity.org/subscribe. Also, feel free to write a review or leave me a comment about the show. Hope this stoked your creative fires, and I'll see you next time on Cracking Creativity.